you state your name, please?
Dan Murphy.
And Mr. Murphy, where were you born?
I was born in Ada, Minnesota, but I lived 72 years at our farm at Felton, Minnesota.
I see. And who were your parents?
My parents were E.J. Murphy and Tessie.
And what did they do?
He was a farmer, and my mother was a housewife school teacher that went back into teaching during the war, really, when she was in her 50s, because they couldn't get teachers. And
mm-hmm. How many brothers and sisters did you have?
My dad was 65 years old when I was born, so he had a family before that. Ten children, really, that eight lived, and they're all dead. But then he remarried. He married my mother, and I had a brother and a sister, and they're both dead. So I'm the last of 13.
Oh my gosh.
The last one of 13 children.
And so, did you go to school in Felton?
Or? Yes, I graduated from Felton High School, and I enrolled at MS and. And I had about 3 years in when they called me into. I enlisted in the Army Air Corps, and then they called me in shortly after that. And so I finished my degree after the war at MS.
So it was the Air Corps that you were in?
Yes.
And where did you go for your training?
All over south of here. I took basic training at Jefferson Barracks at St. Louis, and then I went to the University of Missouri. That's a kind of an interesting story. At Jefferson Barracks, there was a terrible flu epidemic, awful bad. In fact, Walter Winchell mentioned it, that not only pray for the boys in Germany and Japan, but pray for the boys at Jefferson Barracks. Because anyway, I was sick when they were going to move me out. But not very sick, and so I wanted to get the heck out of that place. So when the thermometer came down the line, why, I put it in my pocket or something. I didn't let them take my temperature, and so I got by, and they shipped me to University of Missouri at Columbia for further training. Well, the boys that didn't ship out that day because they were sick, 3 days later they went back to Morehead State College. So that's where I would have gone if I would have not cheated a little bit.
Wow.
But anyway, that's not important, and I'm not sorry I did it, but my life would have been entirely different. I'd have been with a different crew, different Air Force probably, different planes, and everything would have been entirely different in my life.
The guys that were sent back to Morehead State, were they ever recalled back into duty again?
Oh, sure.
They were.
Yeah, that was just like I was. Okay. I mean, you went to a university for 6 weeks as part of your early military training. And then I went to Ellington Field at Houston, Texas, and then I went to Bombardier Navigator training at Childress, Texas. And that's where I was commissioned a second lieutenant in April of 44. And then we went to Shreveport to Barksdale Field. That's still a big, that's where they flew out of for this Afghan conflict. The big bombers and re-tank fuel refueling machines flew out of Barksdale. And then from there I went to New York and shipped overseas on the Queen Elizabeth.
So what was that first flight like?
Which one, you mean?
Did you have to do your first solo flight?
Well, no, I was a bombardier navigator, so.
Oh, okay.
I did, we all, even the bombardier navigators, had a little bit of flight time. We had 10 hours, but we never soloed. We landed and took off, but we always had a instructor with us, and I chose to be a bombardier navigator. Some guys tried to be pilots and they didn't make it, and so then they made bombardier navigators out of them. But I chose to be a bombardier navigator because I thought I could end the war quicker than by being a good bombardier than I could have been a good pilot. And
what was that first flight like then as a bombardier?
Well, I really can't remember it that well. It was just a job that we had to do. I don't remember any particular fear or thrills or anything. It was just a job. I mean, we had trained at Barksdale. We had trained in B-26s for a month or so. We had many, many flights. So we were used to the airplane.
So you went overseas from New York, you went over to overseas?
Landed in England, yes. And we were only stationed in England. My group, the 394th Bomb Group, was moved over to France about a week after I got there. And we moved up to, we stayed behind the lines about 50, 60 miles. But I flew, I mean, I was in three different bases in France as the front lines moved west. I was on the Normandy Peninsula first, and then I went down to Orléans where Joan of Arc was, and then we moved up to Cambrai, which is up near Belgium. And that's, I was flying out of there when I was shot down. We bombed only military targets, bridges and railroads and troop concentrations. We didn't blanket cities with bombs like the heavier, like the B-17s and the Royal Air Force was, they're the ones that really did that. They just went over at night and dropped their bombs on, and saturation bombing on cities.
Where were you shot down?
Well, it was just into Germany by Holland. It was, our target was a house, which was a troop concentration and a railroad center.
In your crew, is there three of you? Are there three of you on the plane?
No, there was eight that day. It was regularly six, but we had two young trainees that were along to learn the ropes.
Did you all eight of you
all
survive?
All eight survived, yes. Yeah, it was my 54th mission over combat mission. And I was slightly wounded. I later got the Purple Heart. And another man was wounded a little more severely. He went into a German hospital, and we didn't see him again. But he ended up in the same camp, but we just never saw him again.
So what happened after you were shot down? I mean, where did you go?
Well,
did you
get
help right away, or?
No. You mean help from the enemy? That's
no. Well, help
no.
From anyone?
No. I came down on the edge of a German village and was surrounded. By the time I got actually to the ground, there was 40, 60, 80 people around there. And my parachute caught a little bit in a telephone wire or a highline wire of some kind and kind of broke my fall, I think, and so I wasn't hurt. Supposedly you wouldn't be hurt anyway, but I wasn't hurt at all. But they started questioning me right away in broken German, but then here came a young boy, about a 14-year-old boy, that spoke perfect English. He told me, I pretended, you know, they had asked me, I was only supposed to give my name, rank, and serial number. That's mm-hmm. all you have to give, mm-hmm. according to the Geneva Convention. And so that was all I was giving them. But he kept asking more questions, and I pretended not to understand. I'd say, nix verstay.
And what does that mean?
That means,
don't understand.
Yeah. And he was livid, you know, because his friends were laughing at him that his English, he apparently had told them he could speak English, and his friends were laughing at him. So he was just absolutely furious. He said, I know you can understand me. I went to school in England. I know you understand me. And I said, Nick's first day. And so when they led, then by that time the military had come up. And when they led me away, he said, I hope they kill you. You know, he was really mad. And but you've got to understand, too, that the Germans spit at us and kicked at us and stuff, too, during my captivity. But it's certainly understandable. You know, the Americans, we've had a little taste of 9-1-1. But the Germans endured 3 years of 9-1-1, day after day and night after night, 3 years. So, understandably, they were ticked off.
So from that point, you were held captive?
Yes.
Prisoner of war?
Yeah.
You and the seven others in your flight crew?
Yeah. They took us to Stalag Luft 1. That means Luft is air, you know, and Stalag a prison.
Well,
prison one.
Before they took you there, they rounded you up and took you to a couple different places where they interrogated you.
Yeah.
Walked you through Hamburg. And
yeah, they didn't. I was never on any forced marches, luckily. They took us on a crude train to Bremen, and I think the Germans don't have union stations like you're too young to remember that too, but like New York has Grand Central Station where five railroads will come in there and you can depart on another railroad. Well, apparently they didn't have that because they'd march us a mile or so in Bremen, and then in Hamburg again they marched us a mile to get on a different train. And that's where we were kicked at and spit upon and stuff. But and there was we went into a air raid shelter too, because there was an air raid. But we went into one that was marked Kriegsgefangenen. That means prisoner of war. And it was marked for us specifically. It wasn't probably the poorest air raid shelter they had, you know. But we went in there and stayed for half an hour until the air raid was over. But then eventually they got us to Barth, which is on the Baltic Sea, about 100 miles north of Berlin. And that was Stalag Luft 1. There was many, many Stalag prisons in Germany, probably 50 of them, I would say, 40 of them. And we were just one of them. And they interrogated us and wanted to know why there was 9 men on our crew. And we all said there wasn't 9 men. I said there was 8 of us, and you got us all. And they said, yeah, we got 8 of you, but they said there was human remains around the wreckage. And I don't know whether they were lying to us or, I mean, the only way that could have been is if some German went up there before the bombs went off. And I was observing it from the air. There was a big explosion when the gasoline went off, and then about a half a minute, about 30 seconds later, then evidently the bombs went off. And that was a huge explosion. Well, there might have been time for some curious civilian to go up there and get blown apart, but I don't know. I think they were trying to trick us by saying there was 9 men, because there wasn't.
How did they go about interrogating you? Were they abusive in any way?
Not really, no. They pretty much followed the Geneva Convention. I think we were fortunate that particular camp was run by the Luftwaffe. Some of the others were run by the stormtroopers, the SS, and that's where the mistreatment was. But our camp was, they tried to stick to the Geneva Convention rules, I think.
What were the conditions like as a prisoner of war?
Well, we had once a week we got a cold shower, but it was really cold, cold water and a cold room. I mean, there was no heat in the room. And so it was very, very, very uncomfortable. But at least we got to clean up once a week. There was about 20 of us in a barracks with they had bunks on the side of the horizontal bunks on the wall that, and a straw mattress, very, very rudimentary, poor little thin mattress, but it was better than nothing.
Huh. What time of year was this?
March, and it was very cold and damp. It was one of the most severe winters they'd had. There wasn't a lot of snow, about a foot of snow, I suppose, but it was very cold and damp. It's right on the Baltic Sea, and we were as close to Denmark, I was as close to Copenhagen as I was to Berlin, really. It was just across the sea there.
How long were you held prisoner of war?
8 weeks. The war was about over. We had been told to... Eisenhower had sent an order a month or so before I was shot down that if we were shot down, we shouldn't try to escape because it would be fruitless, and they thought the war was going to be over. I didn't believe it, but apparently they had pretty good knowledge that the war wouldn't last more than a few months.
Were you well fed during your time as POW?
No. We got one bowl of soup a day from the Germans and black bread, quite a bit of black bread.
What was that like?
Oh, terrible. It had sawdust in it. They were very, very poor and deprived themselves, you know. I think they were putting sawdust in their flour, I think, too. And what else was I going to say? Well, yeah, that's all we got from the Germans, was one bowl of soup a day and black bread. But we got Red Cross parcels. Once every 2 weeks, we would get a parcel. Each man would get a parcel once every 2 weeks, and that contained a small can of powdered milk and a small can of Spam from Austin, Minnesota, and a little tiny package of sugar and salt and a D-bar, a little German German chocolate, and cigarettes. And well, I didn't smoke. I've never smoked a day in my life. I never had a cigarette in my mouth. So I'd either give my cigarettes to someone or I'd trade it for a D-bar, because I've always liked candy and chocolate.
So even as a prisoner of war, you were still able to get those Red Cross parcels?
Yes. Yeah, one every 2 weeks. And that was, I guess that we heard later that the Germans took some too. They helped themselves, I guess, a little bit, but at least they gave us some like they were supposed to. I think we were supposed to have them once a week, but we got them once every 2 weeks.
So this time, this year, that you were a POW, that was 1945?
Yes. Yeah, spring of 45. And we had in our room of 20 guys, three of them volunteered to be kind of cooks. Mm-hmm. Well, there wasn't anything to cook, but they'd dole out the Red Cross parcels. Mm-hmm. And they even attempted to make a cake. They crumbled up the German bread and had sugar and a D-bar, and they attempted to make a cake, and it was some improvement, I guess, over what we'd been eating.
Sure.
But then we were liberated by the Russians.
What was that like?
Well, the first thing they did was insist that we wear black armbands in mourning for President Roosevelt, who had just been killed. Or had died, I mean, died in April. And No, he must have died in, he must have died about the 10th of March, because they were wearing black armbands, and they said that if it wasn't for Roosevelt, they wouldn't be here because of his Lend-Lease program. The weapons that America provided for them was, they were able to fight off the Germans. You know, that was a horrendous war in Germany, worse than, I think it was in Russia, and I think it was worse than anything in Germany, I believe. Just tremendous bloodshed and destruction between the Russians, and hatred between the Germans and the Russians. And then when we were, they were going to march us, they were going to march us to the Black Sea and send us home, supposedly, on by ship.
Well, tell her that they came in riding horses.
And yeah, they were a lot of equipped. A lot of them were drunk. I mean,
the Russians?
Yeah. Yeah, they were just kind of the ragtag outskirts of Zhukov's army. But they were a rough bunch, drinking and just a ragtag rough bunch. That's the only way to describe them. But anyway, our officers, we had some colonels and lieutenant colonels that had been shot down too, and they were, they convinced them that in a few days we'd be flown out, flown back to America, or at least to France. Well, they were successful in keeping them from marching us to the Black Sea, and then we were flown out by B-17s and B-24s that came and got us, and the Russians were just awestruck. They didn't know there was that many airplanes in the world. You know, they just stood there with their mouth open watching those airplanes land. Because there was hundreds of them, you know, that there was 8,000 guys in the camp, and I think we took about 20 on a plane, and so that's a lot of planes.
Mm-hmm. Where did you go from there?
We went to Camp Lucky Strike, which was a big... I think almost all the European prisoners went through Lucky Strike on their way back home. And
where was it?
Yeah, just where is
it? Well, it was on the Normandy Peninsula, right across from England, near Le Havre. And like there was 8,000 from our camp. Well, I think there was probably 200,000 men there. And because I remember when we, my first taste of American food was a loaf of white bread, and GI bread was good. It really was. And but it tasted like angel food cake to us, because we'd been eating that black stuff. But then our first, then we finally got in chow line and had a meal. Well, then the line was so long that we went back to the end of the line and got in again to have another meal 4 or 5 hours later. So that's how big Lucky Strike was. That was a huge, huge camp. I think there was probably a quarter of a million or half a million people there.
How long were you at Camp Lucky Strike?
Well, only a few days. They gave us a choice of going right home or going to our base. And I talked them into, I had a nephew that had been shot down before I was, and we never had learned. He was only missing in action like me. And I thought, well, here now I'll be going back to the United States, so I better find out what happened to Claire. So they said I could go to Paris, and I went to Paris and went to Chafe headquarters and found out that he had been killed and buried in Flanders Field. So I hitchhiked up to Flanders Field in Belgium and visited his grave. And then I went back to Lucky Strike, and by that time all the good troop ships were gone, so I went home on a Liberty ship, and it took 14 days.
Well, where was all your gear and things that had been at your camp when you were shot down? What happened to
them? Well, they had shipped that home in a box to Felton.
So you didn't have any?
No, all we had was new issue stuff that they gave us. new issue there at Lucky Strike.
So you got on a Liberty ship where?
At Camp Lucky Strike in Le Havre, okay. France.
And then that went to New York?
To New York, yes.
And that was 14 days?
Yeah.
What were the conditions on that ship?
Oh, they weren't good. We hit some stormy weather, and I think it wouldn't have been 14 days if we hadn't hit that stormy weather. But I was an officer, so I wasn't mistreated too. Mm-hmm. We always got the best of things.
Any
you know.
Seasickness?
No, it didn't bother me. And then we went right home to Fargo from New York and Felton.
Take a train then from New York?
Yeah. Yeah.
North Dakota?
Yeah.
How long on the train?
Oh, I don't remember. A day and a night, I think. I mean, two days and one night, I think.
What was that feeling like, knowing you were on the train to go home?
Oh, it was great. I've often said that I think of that song, what is it, Annie? They all, green grass of home. They all came to meet me, arms reaching, smiling sweetly. It was good to touch the green grass of home. That's what I think of when I, and it was July, so it was nice.
Is your mother there?
Yes, yeah. My dad had been dead many years before that, but my mother was there.
What did you do once you got home to Fargo, Felton?
Well, we were given kind of a month's leave, and then I went back to Texas to get discharged. I went to San Antonio, and they sent me to Denver, Colorado, where I was mustered out, and back to Fargo. And then I went back to help on the farm and to finish my school. I finished in the winter and spring quarters. I finished at MS. Finished in the spring of 46.
What was your degree in?
Phi Ed in English.
That's terrific.
And a journalism minor. Mm-hmm. But I never used it. I taught 1 year, but then I went back into full-time farming and farmed my whole life. And I met this lovely lady in 54.
Where did you meet her?
Oh, I was in the service with her brother. And that's really how I got to know her.
And when did you retire from farming?
In 96. Well, I retired about 90, really. But we continued to live on the farm. And Danny was the farmer, but he lived in Borup. And then in 96 we moved here and Danny moved to the farm.
Mm-hmm. Now Danny is your son?
Yes, he's the oldest son. We have four other children, two teachers and a doctor and a lawyer.
Wow.
And they're all going to be home here for a couple of days for Easter.
Very impressive. That's nice. Do you keep in contact or have you kept in touch with any of the buddies
that's a good question. I didn't for about 40 years, I guess. But then 10, 15 years ago, we started getting together again, and we have an active 394th Bomb Group reunion every year. We're going to go to this one, it's in September at Dayton, Ohio, at the greatest air museum in the world. Have you ever been there?
No.
That's a wonderful museum.
Good for you.
You should tell them that your crew just got together there in Dayton, Ohio, 6-7 years ago. It's the first time we'd all been together since you were.
Yeah, there was four of us that were, two were dead, but four of us got together about 5 years ago.
That's good, because then
yeah. There's only three of us left, the co-pilot and the tail gunner and myself are the only three left of the six. So.
From the time you went into the service until the time you came home again, how long a time time span was
about that? 3 years, three and a half years till I was mustered out, I guess.
Yeah. What do you think about the war that we're fighting now in Afghanistan?
Well, it's a tough question. It's unavoidable that we have to fight. We have to fight terrorism. And I think they're doing a good job of it. Bush has done I've been a lifelong Democrat, but I think Bush has done a wonderful job. He's a good commander in chief, I think. And we just have to do it. I agree with him that it's going to take a long time. You know, when you're dealing with people that don't care if they live or not, why, it's like dealing with animals.
Scary.
You just don't know how to do it. But I think the young people will do a good job.
So do you think it's a war that can be won?
Never completely, I don't think. In my estimation, that it won't ever be completely won, but we can thin them out and make it more livable, I suppose.
How did the war affect your life, Mr. Murphy?
Well, it didn't have a great effect. Do you think, Ann? It was just a job I had to do, and I went back to what I had wanted to do, was to either teach or farm, and I decided to farm. And so it didn't have a big effect. I brought up Roosevelt. He's always been a hero of mine, because I have said that he took us through the worst depression in history that started one administration ahead of him. And he took us through the worst weather in history, the Dust Bowl of the 30s. And he took us through the worst war in history, fought on three fronts, half the world apart. You know, it's just amazing how he rallied the people and rallied the troops, and he was a leader.
Do you have any final thoughts about what you went through? Any buddy stories that you wish to share? Or?
Not really that I can think of. You asked me how I want to be remembered.
That's my next question.
I want to be remembered as a guy that just did his part, did what his country asked, and flew 54 combat missions and had no choice about being a prisoner. I mean, when you bail out, you don't have any choice about becoming a prisoner or not. That's about it, I guess.
Thank you, Mr. Murphy.
You're welcome. You're welcome, Linda.